Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore positively into the crab cake season because it's last place baseball and because I'm not really interested in Edmonton and Florida and Oklahoma City and the rest of all of this. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Greenmount Station in Hampstead this Thursday. We will be giving away the Back to the Future scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery, also powered up by our friends at Curio Wellness, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions as well. And we're going to be at Fadley's at Lexington Market next Friday. Also got new dates. We're going to be at Reader's Crab House later on in the month up in Reisterstown. I'm working on a show at the Y in Randallstown at the pool for summertime. And we're also going to be at the new Costas in Timonium. And yes, it is open. So stop in the old Grandstand Grill there if you're anywhere right near Curio Wellness, right near the racetrack, right near York and Timonium or Pedonia. And see our friends at Costas. No crabs at Costas in Timonium. You got to go to Dundalk to get those. This guy wrote to me a couple of months ago. I'm a little remiss. I was like, that's a long summer. We'll have plenty of time to talk about pennant race baseball and all that. The book is called Death of a Childhood. It's not nearly as terrible as it sounds. A memoir of the 1989 Why Not Baltimore Orioles. And I think timing is always everything. Ryan Basson is about to join us. He is an author here. Lives down in the D.C. area and writing. But I don't know that he's a full-time author, but we're about to find out. He wrote to me, said, I wrote this book. You want to have me on? And I'm like, yeah, I'll have you on. Then I went to Vegas. Then I came back. Then Justin Tucker. And then last place and losing and losing and runners in scoring position and losing and bad pitching. And then Jim Henneman died last week. And 1989 Orioles came back in so many ways. I had Charles Steinberg on. I had Rick Vaughn on. Even Alan McCallum has brought that up as his, the moment where he became an Orioles fan. Meanwhile, I'm sitting around here talking about like Bobby Gritch with John Eisenberg and Rich Coggins and Al Bunbury. Everybody comes into baseball, I guess, at a different time. If you are a lifer fan, hopefully you didn't come in this year. It's kind of a bad part of the movie. But I would say, Ryan, this 89 thing that you've done, it's amazing to have you on because when Jim Henneman passed away last week, and we had a huge thing here, and everybody from Jim Palmer and Tim Kurchin down to the ball boys were all there. I mean, I saw Freddie Tyler. I saw people there. The 89 things, like in the middle of all of it, because apparently you fell in love with baseball at that time. I was working at the Evening Sun with Ken Rosenthal and Jim Henneman, and I found tear sheets from the day after Phil Bradley had six RBIs at Fenway Park of me having a headline story with Mike Bielecki, pitching from Dundalk. And baseball was such a heartbeat of everything. And if you were a boy in Baltimore in 1989 and you were Alan McCallum, or I mean, Luke was 4 or 5, but it was the heartbeat of our city. And it's a pleasure to welcome you on.
Thank
Anybody
you.
that has a passion project to A, write a book, I have been so infected, write a book about something they're passionate about, I have been so affected, and get it to market, God bless you. So good luck with your book. Happy Father's Day, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Give me the lowdown, man. Like, what's your story, man? I'm Aparicio. What do you want to know about
Well, let me talk a little bit about myself first and kind of how I came into this season, really, and how, as you mentioned, really fell in love with that O's team, really with baseball. I was a fifth grader when the season started. It was a season that, I'm sure many of your listeners remember that they were expected to lose 100 games again, for a second
So you're a
straight
fifth
season.
grader. Did you go to Fantastic Fans Night in '88 or no?
No,
Okay.
I was growing up in Rockville, the DC suburbs. So it was a bit of a haul to get to Memorial Stadium or to
Different than
get
getting
to
on the bus in Dundalk for me. I mean, we all had a different pathway, right? I got you. So they came to you on like television, right? Like home team sports kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Home team sports, and then DC 20 carried the road games. So we didn't even get all 162 games that year. It was, I think, home team sports maybe had most of the home games, and like DC 20 maybe carried, I'm guessing here, but maybe half the road games. And so
Right.
otherwise, we had
Yeah.
to
I
get
mean,
on the
that was
radio.
typical baseball in the late 80s. Yeah. And you come into this and they had won the World Series when you were a puppy. And then they lost all these games. And now 89 happens. And this is not on tip. I mean, Your story is the story of everyone your age I know in Baltimore who's now, as gray as I am at this point for all of us sitting around waiting around
Getting,
from '83.
yeah,
But
getting
I mean,
there.
but once you get the bug, right? I mean, Alan McCallum always says to me, it was '89 for him, '89 for him, a little younger than me. And that's not, and didn't grow up in a house where my father was infected with baseball. My last name was Aparicio. How did you come into it in Rockville? Was your dad, family, your mom, neighbor? How does a kid find baseball in Rockville, Maryland,
No,
when there are
it
no
was,
Nationals or Senators, right?
yeah, I mean, I found baseball just playing baseball starting out around 86, 87, just playing in, in youth leagues with friends. But, and that's what I started following. So 86 season is the first MLB season that I followed, and I followed the Orioles and the Mets. For some reason, we had just gotten a cable package and we had WWOR, which had a bunch of Mets games. And of course, it was the 86 Mets. So you're glued to that. But at the same time, the O's, if you remember, were pretty good that year. They still had Murray and Cal and Fred
That was
Lynn
the Lee
and
Lacy, Don Ossie, Fred Lynn era.
Boddicker. And they were, I think, 2.5 games out in mid-August. And so, we were following two division races with the Mets. And then, they pretty much a clinch by July. So it became easier to watch the O's then. And then they just collapsed. It was Earl Weaver's comeback season and also his last season. And I think they, I'm pretty sure my math is right here. I think they went 14 and 42 to close the season. So that was it, and
It
like,
wasn't good. And, I
no.
worked at the paper every night at that time at the Evening Sun, and I did the scoreboard page. So I'm the one that had to put the statistics in every night when they were losing those baseball games. It was the first year that I was at the newspaper. So, I mean, I remember all of this. I remember every Jay Tibbs and Phil Bradley and all that. So 89 comes, and you had yourself a summer that you're writing about 4 decades later.
Yeah, I mean, you can't talk about 89 without talking about 88 because you remember they lost 21 games to start the season and they decided to finally rebuild. And so they get rid of Murray and Lynn, Boddicker, all these veterans. And then they start this 89 season with all these rookies and, basically cast-offs, guys like Tim Hewlett, who sort of played most of the season in the minors, hadn't even played like anywhere professionally, certainly not in MLB in 88. They throw Jeff Ballard out there again, hoping that maybe this will be the year that he clicks. And they were just not expected to do anything. So it became this really romantic story. Even in April they were 500. And I remember coming back from a Little League game with the coach who was like, "But the Orioles are in first place." They were like 6-6, but it was like remarkable that they weren't 0-12. And we started following them. Watching them, and they had a lot of really good young players. Mike Devereaux. Brady Anderson, Steve Finley, just in the outfield alone. Billy Ripken was probably in his third or fourth year then. Craig Worthington's a rookie. Mickey Tettleton was a cast off from Oakland. And all these guys just kind of came together. And as late as, like, I want to say June, Tettleton's leading the league in home runs. And then when he goes down with an injury in mid-August, I think he was leading all catchers in RBIs and maybe homers as well. But it was just this, you had these guys that came out of nowhere, guys we had never heard of. And, even at 10, 11 years old, I knew, I understood enough. This was the fourth season I'd watched baseball and become obsessed with it. And so I understood enough that, like, this isn't supposed to happen. Like, you're not supposed to have a team, especially in that time. You're not, when there wasn't, I guess there was free agency, but it wasn't, a situation where you have teams that can really turn around in 1 year. Like, in fact, at to that point, no team in the history of baseball had ever come from last place one season to winning the division or a league the following season. It would happen in 91, but this is 89. So
Well,
we didn't
part of
have
it
that.
was the deals with Brady Anderson and Boddicker and Finley and just all of those young guys that kind of came together at that time. And the weirdest part was that that Eddie wasn't a part of it, right? So like that was the juxtaposition from a media standpoint in 1989 is addition by subtraction and all that. And certainly didn't bode well for Eddie that they were competitive after he left. But Eddie came back at his fifth 500th year and is so honored. I was a kid that was an Eddie Memorial Stadium guy in 79, all of that era. But the 89 thing was fresh. Also, Hall of Fame manager Cal Senior had been fired the year before. Cal Junior still playing on the team. Billy's into the mix at that point as well. So yeah, and the other part of that was Fantastic fans, and you should go listen to the Charles Steinberg and the Rick Vaughn pieces from last week, as you know, true historians of the team as they are. Fantastic fans night. I attended that. I mean, I was 20 years old at the time, working at the paper, and my dad went to that game with me, the Rangers game in '88. They announced a new stadium. So '89 also had, they were clearing dirt and putting a shovel in the ground, starting Camden Yards, and you know, it was all. It had been argued in 86 and 87 really about like whether Port Covington, you know, was going to be where the stadium was going to be or whether they were going to build on the Memorial Stadiums. There was always a question about this. Once this got done and we were keeping the baseball team, this is coming from a broken kid who lost the Colts at 15, right? In 84, right? So once 88 team stinks, 89, you wake up. First things first, we had Hammer Jack, so that's good. And I was 21. But really, Camden Yards was going to get built. And the fact that the team was staying and the Colts were gone and football was probably never coming back. I mean, you know, nobody here ever thought football was coming until it came because, like, it was all bourgeois. But I'll say this, the hope of this stadium as the backdrop, and you're a kid, but as an adult, to think, all right, we're keeping the team. I don't know what this stadium and this warehouse thing downtown is going to be. It was kind of a nebulous kind of thing until we all got into it and saw what it was going to be. And Janet Marie had brought forth. But '89 also had that part of we've saved the franchise. Frank has come back, and you know Jim Palmer will tell you Frank, and so with Brooks was Frank was the reason that that they won in '66, and my cousin and like the whole deal, right? But now you got Frank running the team, you got all this young talent. I wouldn't say dissimilar to what the last 2 years have been, but nobody looked at Brady Anderson or Finley the way they look at Gunnar Henderson or Jackson Holliday or Rutschman, like they're going to the Hall of Fame. Nobody thought Curt Schilling was going to the Hall of Fame, and he isn't, but he probably should keep his mouth shut. But you know what? That's all over with now. But that talent that they had there, you know, it got him through 1 year and into the stadium. And I mean, look, the Orioles, I don't need to tell you since you were a kid that they've sputtered and sputtered and they've had horrific ownership. They had a beautiful stadium. They've had assets like Cal Ripken and they've had ass hats like Albert Bell. You know what I mean? So they've had it all. But 89 to seed you, you're still watching every game. This the theme of your book is it's changed your life, right? It put you on a pathway, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, outside of baseball for me at the time. So, I mean, I was just started adolescence essentially during the beginning of the season. I was a pretty happy, free-spirited kid, and then all of a sudden, these anxiety disorders just kind of hit me, and I had no idea what was going on. So, and in addition to that, we had some family tragedy. My grandmother got diagnosed with terminal cancer. My mom suddenly is not around as much. And then I'm finishing elementary school. They have redrawn the school boundaries. So the same kids that I've been going to school with from, K to five, all of a sudden, we're getting pulled in different directions. And I was, my parents made the decision to send me to a different school, starting with middle school. And that started with September of '89. But it was always kind of haunting me, the specter of going to a new school and being pulled away from friends, while all this other stuff is going on with family, and like inside my head. And so the O's that season really became a refuge for me, as so much was going on, it was an escape, not just going to the few games that I went to, but also just like you said, watching just about every game that I could and diving into this miracle. They really presented for me one last miracle to hold on to. I was alive for the miracle on ice, but I was 2 years old, and so I obviously have no recollection of that. I had been told about, other sports miracles and, the Miracle Mets, which, unfortunately, at the expense of the O's, but I had never seen anything like that. Just it, to me, it was all just kind of history, and to be experiencing it myself and to see this with my own eyes, this, I mean, it really was a miracle. Like everybody was picking to finish last or close to last, and they're all of a sudden at the All-Star break, they're like 7.5 games up, and we're starting to believe that this is going to happen. Like it was a down year for the rest of the AL East. Remember, there's seven teams in a division, and
I mean,
only
I
one team
appreciate
made the
where you're
playoffs.
going, but all I can think about is me sitting with my girlfriend Wendy over at Chi Chi's eating salsa and watching them lose the last game to Toronto. And every time I bring Greg Olson on or I see Dave Johnson, I do all I can do to not bring it up. You know, it's funny, like, you know, all these years later, it's like, you know, I lived through 83 and 79. I mean, Charles Steinberg was bragging about 79 the other day. And I'm thinking, 79 was the greatest summer of my life. Like that, if I were to write the romantic book, I was 10. I was between sixth grade and seventh grade. I went to every game in 79. I mean, I went to 31 games in a row in 1979 before they lost. They were 31-0 at games I went to at home before they lost. Steve Trout pitched a six-hit shutout. I'm still trying to chase him around with Rick Tellinger. I'm going to get him on because Steve Trout writes like kids' books now. It's crazy, right? So all of these years later, this greatly affected you, and clearly you turned out all right. Did baseball save your soul, Ryan Basson?
I don't know if it saved my soul, but it definitely helped. It more than anything, it kind of put off having to deal with all the crap that was going on, my life outside of baseball, not just following the O's that year, but
I
also
think
playing.
baseball is escapism. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think I've seen that 2 years ago when I went out there in the clinch era and saw people literally. Older folks, and these are the people I really want. I mean, I had Clancy on. I said, I want them to win for you. I mean, I was 15. They won the World Series. I was with my dad. My dad's dead. My kid doesn't care. I had my moment. I've had two Super Bowls. I've written books. I mean, I've had all my moments with sports, but I want everybody else to have their moment. You haven't had yours. Luke Jones hasn't had his. So I'm in there kind of punching for all you young guys, as I get a little older and want that for the city. But the escapism part, I can't begin to tell you how I've seen it with my own eyes to go out to Camden Yards and see people on a clinch night sitting all alone with their radio and their scorebook out in left field. Not one person, not two, not five, lots of people who just clearly sit at home and the Orioles are a companion to them in the way their animal is. In literally people who are alone, baseball, maybe it's that AM radio thing, and I've owned an AM radio station for 3 decades. My dad would have the little white thing in his ear listening to Chuck and Bill and taking the transistor radio to bed with you at night. You're a different kid. You had it on TV. Right? I mean, you're OT sports
But
guy.
the funny thing is, like I listened to a lot of end of games on the radio because I had to go to bed. The games then, most of them even locally, started at 7:30, and so April, May, even into June, and certainly September, it's the school year, and so I'm going to bed in like the seventh inning. Once in a while, I was able to stay up, like the game that Tim Hewlett won on a home run in the bottom of the ninth with two outs in September against Cleveland, but. For the most part, I'm going to bed in the seventh inning, but I had a little clock radio, right next to my pillow up there on a little headstand. And so I used to put the games on. I think it was probably John Miller. I mean, I couldn't,
Oh yeah. Totally John
just
Miller. Joe
listen to
Angel
him.
right then. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so listening to those guys, I consumed plenty of that season on the radio, especially some of the ends of these big games. But yeah, I mean, it was a combination of that,
Olsen with the
HD.
curveballs in Oakland. Yeah, all night long. I was at the
That one
paper
might have
that
been.
night. We were listening to the game on the radio. I mean, I worked at the paper on deadline, putting the box scores into the paper. So the Orioles were, every part of my life. And Ken Rosenthal and Jim Henneman were at the game in Chicago, at the game in Oakland at 4 in the morning when their Radio Shack. TRS, it stood for trash. TRS 80, trash 80 would break down and the couplers wouldn't work. And I'd have to take dictation with the phone up on my ear
Oh
down at
God,
Gower Street while I'm watching my car get broken into out on Guilford, So Ryan Basin is here. He has a book on the 89 Orioles, the Why Not 89 Orioles. The book is Death of a Childhood. So we got to have a happier title than that. It is Father's Day. Tell everybody why they're going to buy the book and why they're going to enjoy it, Ryan.
if you remember that season, you'll really enjoy it because the book is essentially half about that season. It's about, in detail and how the team was assembled. How they were expected to do nothing, how they came together, made this incredible run, and carries you all the way through the season up until the last weekend. As you referenced that weekend in Toronto where they had the chance to become the first team in Major League history in over 100 years of baseball to go from worst to first in a season. I think also, even if you're not into baseball or if you have similar interests that as I did or similar experience, rather I should say, as I did, is. If you're around my age, I think any Gen Xer would appreciate this because growing up, with baseball in the late 80s, it was a very different time, and things changed immediately in 1990 with some of the media deals and the lockout and such. And so going back to revisit, a different time in Baltimore, in DC, with the Orioles, with MLB. And also we stuff that was going on outside of baseball with me, as I mentioned, dealing with some anxiety disorders that just kind of hit me out of nowhere, and not having really any idea what's going on, and not feeling like I could talk to anybody about this. This is always the part that everybody loves to hear, but it was, as a Gen X boy, I wasn't necessarily allowed, felt like, to talk about these kinds of things. And I know there, I'm sure there are thousands of other kids that also had to repress these feelings. So I talk about what it was like to live through that, as these, as I mentioned before, I was a very free-spirited kid, and all of a sudden to have these disorders and have these like weird thoughts, and suddenly not want to be recognized in public, even by my little league coach when I made a great play, in a game. It was just strange to go through that. So I think people who went through similar experiences can really can empathize with that. And I think anybody who has kids now who are, dealing with anxiety, can draw some lessons from this, as far as like what signs to look for, how to recognize this, and how to help kids that are going through similar situations.
You doing well now?
Yeah, I'm doing okay.
Yeah,
It's took
man,
a, it's
listen, dude, if you want to get out of the anxiety business here, especially if it comes to you naturally, don't watch the Orioles right now, man. I mean, like, this has been, so you're still stuck in the soap opera. You're still wishing and hoping.
Yeah, I mean, I made the transition, growing up in D.C. when the Nats moved here, and I
Oh, you're
was
one of
not.
those,
Yeah,
are you? All right,
yes.
nice having you on the show. Good, good. How was that
I still
parade for you a
follow.
couple years ago?
It was enjoyable. I have to admit
I
it,
had
but
Barry Trotz on for an hour this week, so you can we can share
yeah.
the Caps love, at least for that, But most of us up here don't really want much to do with most of you down there, especially when
Yeah.
it comes to the football team that we now share. I say that's Maryland's other football team now that they're good. But
Right.
I mean, we're Baltimore through and through. It's always interesting to me, and this goes back to the Capitol Center in the 80s and whatnot, where I would bump into a guy like you at a Capitol Center thing and you'd have on like a Redskin hat and an Orioles shirt. I'm like,
Yeah.
dude, pick one. You know what I mean?
Well,
Like, don't, you know, we don't,
that was
you,
our team. I mean,
I
it was
know. I
just an
know. It was always
hour.
weird. And now you
Yeah.
have your own team, and now we have an empty stadium and an empty soul.
Well, you don't have an empty stadium when the team is good. And
The
you're still
team's not
attracting a
good right
lot.
now.
Yeah, I know, and it
Yeah.
was the last
Yeah.
couple of years. It's just might just be a hiccup this
There was
year.
something about the 10,000 empty seats at the playoff game last year that really stirred my soul.
Oh
R
yeah.
really disturbed me in a way. For like, my dad took me out in 74 for the playoffs against the Oakland A's. They were the first team I ever hated, and even then, the stadium, like, you can look at the pictures, the stadium wasn't full for playoff games in that era. But 79, 83, 96, 97, what Camden Yards did
Oh,
for
yeah.
people in your area. I mean, I'm not, there's no question that that traffic from Bowie, Laurel, PG County, Silver Spring, Rockville, even Northern Virginia, the tech sector in Reston and Dulles Corridor, like all of that, they powered the Orioles at Camden Yard. Larry King, Will, George Will. I mean, just all of that, the Orioles store and all of that stuff, it worked. It recruited a whole generation of you, and then
It
really
did.
begat the Nats, right? You go to more Nats games than Orioles games. Is that the truth?
Yes, it's true.
God.
No.
You know,
It's hard
Peter
when you can
Angelos
jump on the
came on with me.
metro.
Because you wrote a book, I'm going to channel Peter today for, you youngins that took the Nats over the Orioles. Peter Angelos sat with me over a couple of highballs over at the barn. The one time in his life he had the courage to actually sit and answer some questions. He was aided by alcohol that night. He said, "We all think there should be a team in D.C. Let me tell you why. It's going to be like the Bay Area. If there's two teams, they'll both cancel each other out, neither one of them will be any good." And I'm thinking, yeah, especially if you take all the cable TV money and suppress it and put it in your
Yeah,
pockets and your kids.
yes.
So, so I know the truth and I've written the truth. Ryan Basin has written the truth. He has a book on the 89 Orioles, as well as growing up and some hard times. And obviously, I'd love a redemption story, even if your redemption is through the Nats and winning a World Series and having to trade the Orioles in. Death of a Childhood is the memoir of a 1 year in the life of a preteen, a time when oncoming puberty, family illness, a frightening new battle with anxiety disorders, an impending school switch, and a changing relationship with his closest confidant. His mom threatens to change him from a happy, free-spirited kid into a fraught early adolescent. It almost sounds like a kid's book, but this is not a kid's book, right? Not at all, right?
No, it is definitely not a kid's book.
Yeah, not a kid's book. Yeah, but it could
Not
be.
recommend.
It could be,
Yeah,
right? I
I
mean,
think, yeah, preteens, teenagers could definitely read it and learn something from it, and appreciate it. There's a fair amount of profanity and some derogatory terms in there, being, a boy in 1989, I write the truth.
it was all that with Earl Weaver, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's Kids could read that book, right?
Well, hey man, happy Father's Day. Good to you. Good luck with the book. I'm glad you came on, shared some of your memories. I always forget about all you guys that like the Orioles that weren't from around, that were more DC oriented. And I guess that's leveled out at this point. I mean, any of your Oriole fans in that area still Oriole one, Nats two, or no? I mean,
Yeah.
the Nats have been set such a rich. The Nats have given all of you a real reason to go down to the ballpark and be involved. Not recently, but they, that franchise fulfilled its potential much more so than our stadium has fulfilled its over 30 years, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, when you get guys like Strasburg and Harper and Rendon, and then you add to that with Scherzer and the team they had, I think they've been in the playoffs 5 times in 8 years and finally did win a championship.
They
So
had a
it's
couple of those really
there's,
terrible heartbreaks, right? Like, I was on a Ravens bus coming back from maybe like Pittsburgh or someplace, or maybe it was a hockey bus. Or now it was a Pittsburgh. It was a longer trip where they imploded that night against the Cardinals, and like everybody was watching it on the
I
bus,
was at
and
that game.
I'm
Yes.
like, I mean, you were going to work. I mean, like it was on when we got on the bus, which like we're all Oriole fans. We're all like, oh man, this is like the Redskins winning the Super Bowl, and like we just don't want it. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
but I don't know. I to be really honest, I Jim Irsay's death last week. I've done all this stuff about giving up the sword with the Indianapolis thing, which I did years ago. It just made me a better human. I mean, hating Dan Snyder is one thing because I met him once. But like, and for whatever the ownership is down there, delivered a championship, whatever. I mean, I've had my issues with the Leones' people and whatnot, but like, I don't root against the Wizards. They do poor enough without me. I don't root against Ovechkin. He was always fine with me when he's not hanging out with Putin. And the Nationals thing, I've never had it in my soul to hate them. And maybe it was just because Peter was such a jerk. In just a general sense, like, let those people have a good. They built their own thing down there. They did it without any money because Peter was completely tourniqueting the whole thing. I mean, everything the Orioles did was to screw the Nats, and the Nats got a World Series out of it, which I think, like, good for all of you and Phil Wood and everyone else who ever loved the Senators. You know what I mean? For me.
Yeah, and I kind of get where you're coming from. I because as a fan of the Washington football team, throughout the whole Snyder era, like I watched a lot of friends jump ship. I used to tell them like you're not welcome back when the bandwagon gets good again.
No, that's bullshit. No, 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 no. Wait, no. You go in a restaurant, you get a bad meal, and the owner comes over and wags his finger in your face, and you leave. You don't owe that. You don't owe them any. I push back on that after 35 years of that fanboy talk. I just do. I mean, I just do. I mean, I've dealt with these people who are behind pearly gates and country club people and billionaires. I look, man, I helped get the stadiums built. I sat here and begged and said, sports is important. It's important. It's important. It's important if the people that own it treat it the way it should be treated. That has not happened with our baseball franchise, and it's not currently happening with the football franchise. See Tucker. So like I come at it a little different than that. They owe you. You don't owe them.
Yeah, no, and that's it's true, but I mean it's interesting too that so many people who were fans of the they were the Redskins then, jumped ship and became Ravens fans, or even start, in some cases started rooting for whatever,
It's easy to be a Commanders fan now. They got a quarterback. I mean,
it is,
there's a reason to come back. And if you want to come back now and you didn't give Dan Snyder the hair off your patoot, good for you. Go back, wave your burgundy and gold. The R word and all that. I mean, y'all got to figure that out because that, get a
Definitely
name and pick a color scheme and go get them. You know what I mean? Go at them, But it is that it's good for the region when the sports teams are good. I will never make that argument. I like that. It's good for conversation. Ryan, I got to roll, man. I'm on a time clock here, but I appreciate you. Good luck with your book for, and anybody that finishes a book, tip of the cap to you to get it done and hit that last page and come back and visit again soon, all right?
Yeah, definitely will. I
Come
appreciate you
back
having
during the
me
Nats
on.
Orioles series and we'll kick up dust.
Yeah, sounds great.
We'll talk about television rights and things like that. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.